My name is Cal C, and today on The Stoop, I invite past contributor to South Shore Ave, Sean Adonis, as we break down the 20th anniversary of Jay-Z's classic album, Volume 2, Hard Knock Life. We rank our top five songs from the album, analyze where this album ranks in the Hove catalog, we might surprise some of you, discuss the importance this album had on Rockefeller as well as Jay-Z's career. We juggle all of that with a drink in our hands. How do we do it? We're so talented. So talented. South Shore Ave is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Specifically, you can listen to them on Apple Podcasts. You can listen to it on Spotify. You can listen to it on Google Play. And you can listen to it on Stitcher. Listen and subscribe to the shows and rate the shows too. I'm going to pepper you to give me that 5-star love until I'm blue in the face. All right, so do it. And you can also go to SouthShoreAve.com to check out the entire catalog of podcast shows. Once again, that's SouthShoreAve.com. It's The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. Baby. All right, so back in 1998, the hip-hop scene was recovering from a trying time. Hip-hop was essentially still reeling from the deaths of Tupac Shakur and Biggie Smalls, and it remains to be the most devastating period of the golden era of hip-hop and for the genre as a whole. But in 98, it started recovering slowly. So in the midst of the end of the golden era and the beginning of a new era, new stars like DMX, Big Pun, Cannabis, and Noriega started emerging out of the woodworks. Lauryn Hill cemented herself as one of the greatest artists of her generation with her Miseducation of Lauryn Hill album. But there was still someone missing to take the throne as the best in the game. Enter Jay-Z. Fresh off the Volume 1 album and touring with Puff Daddy and the family, Jay-Z was at a crossroads. So first off, he took himself off of the rest of that No Way Out tour that Puffy had back then. And then him and Rockefeller Records put out The Streets Is Watching, straight to DVD movie and soundtrack that the streets loved. And then they went into the studio and started working on Volume 2, Hard Knock Life. They put out the self-titled record, and all of a sudden it mushroomed across the world. It made Jay-Z the biggest artist in hip-hop. It gave him the mythical King of New York status, a crown that was last worn by his friend Biggie Smalls. And it also remains Jay-Z's most commercially successful album, selling over 5 million albums. Now, before we continue further, Sean and I, whenever we do a podcast together, we always do so with a drink in our hands. Now I almost broke tradition today. I almost broke tradition today because I started doing a cleanse, but I feel it would be like bad luck if, you know, that's gonna rain down upon me if I ditch our tradition.
What's more cleansing than alcohol, Kevin? Let's be serious, man. Than the beautiful elixir that we refer to as liquor. Come on, brother. I'm sipping on some Crown today, man. I want to keep it classy. So, okay. Some Crown Royale. Sound fancy enough.
On some rocks?
Nah, I drink mine straight, man. No rocks. No rocks to pollute that taste.
I put a little rocks in my Grey Goose today. I had a little Grey Goose vodka action going on right now.
Nice, just neat, nice and smooth, you know? Nice, yep. And distilled.
Yep, I started getting away from the chasers, man. I've come over to your world, Sean.
Yeah, man, I done bun them chasers long time. The unwanted calories, man. I'm not drinking for flavor, Calvin.
No.
It's not for that.
You're putting it down to feel nice.
Yes, sir. Serves a purpose, a greater purpose.
All right, but before, you know what, before we get into, like, you know, what your thoughts are about the album, we're just gonna get right to it right now. We're gonna get into our top five.
Actually, before you do that though, let me add, like, honestly speaking, I was like kind of mesmerized when you were doing the intro, man, because, man, that was educational as hell. I did you research that, or do you actually remember all of that? Oh. If so, then my memory is shit compared to yours. Because I don't remember 95% of what you just said.
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. I try to do the research. I always try to do a little bit of research when I do these ones here.
Good job, man. If you ask me, it'd be like, yeah, I remember there was hip hop going on, and then Jay-Z dropped Hard Knock Life. That was my recollection of that era.
Yeah, it's like first it was the Isley Brothers, then it was the OJs, then it was Michael Jackson, then it was Jay-Z. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, I try to drop a little bit of research, man, to at least show people that I at least know a little bit of what I'm doing, just a little bit.
Nice. That was actually enlightening to me, man. I was like, oh shit, I don't remember that. I didn't notice that. I don't remember him on tour with Puff and them. I don't even remember that at all, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Sean. Just try a little something, you know? Try a little something.
I know I'm not usually so complimentary. You could thank the crown.
Oh, yes.
Crown, I put my guard down. Next, I'm going to start laughing like Kawhi when I really start. When my guard really goes down.
I felt like that laugh hurt him. I felt like it hurt for him to laugh when he did
creepy
that.
Laugh. I never seen somebody laugh so guarded. Like he laughed like he was letting the cat out the bag, like letting the secret out the bag. Like he was so uncomfortable letting that out and letting the world see him put his guard down. It was weird, man.
It almost felt like if he laughed too hard, somebody would steal his soul. Like that's what it kind of felt. That's what it kind of felt like.
Seriously, man.
And if he's ever listened to this, I hope you stay. I really do.
Seriously, stay. We need that laugh. We need that laugh. Laugh at the pain of the previous years, man.
But the laugh did feel like the laugh hurt me. Like it felt like it didn't come right coming out of him. Like it just didn't. You know, it was like a nervous laugh. Like just you know.
It was creepy, man.
Well, let's hope he makes up with it with MVP stats by the end of the month.
Let's hope so, man, because he's gonna make up for that.
All right, well, that's a nice way to segue into our top five Jay-Z tracks off of the Hard Knock Life album.
Yes, but
let's get into it right now. So basically we're gonna have our list of our top five. Much like the last podcast I did with the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, we're gonna rank our top fives. They're probably not going to be alike, which is fine. It makes for good debates if it doesn't set up the same way. So, you know, we're all for that. And without further ado, man, let's get this started. You know, because you're my guest, of course, with your crown in your hand. What is fifth on your list in terms of the top five songs off of Hard Knock Life?
Okay, so fifth. All right, so. Here's the thing. Let me intro this by saying that it's kind of hard to look back at, you know, an album, you know, that's 20 years old because your tastes change in 20
right.
years.
Right.
Right. And then some songs have staying power and some don't. So some songs that used to bang back then, you look at them now and you're like, you know, they don't have, you know, replayability 20 years later on your playlist. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to give my five. I'm going to give my number five is kind of a tie. All right.
Wow.
So, and it's tough. So I'm going to say Paper Chasers with Jay-Z and Foxy.
Foxy Brown. Okay.
And then, the track with the Locks and Beanie.
Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
I knew you would have that in your top five. I really knew you would.
Yeah. So I'll explain why I put each of them. So Reservoir Dogs, one that, I mean, the Shaft beat, I could have done without that, but or the Shaft sample. But as far as like, how could you, you know, not really pay homage to a track that had, you know, the Locks, Jay and Beanie in the same track.
Sauce, you know what Money I
mean? Too. Sauce Money on top of that. Sauce Money vanished. I don't know what happened to Sauce Money anyway, man.
He was nice though. He was nice.
But don't you wonder about guys like him that they had the connections, they had the talent, and they just vanished? Like, was it poor marketing? Was it a loss of, you know, they didn't have the passion for hip hop? Or you wonder what happens or what's the driving force to a guy like him just not making any noise at all, man.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Like, what kind of cosign do you need more than Jay? Jay's your man, and you still can't come out with a single? Yeah, I never heard Hot Sauce Money come out with a single.
Yeah, Primo Beats. Yeah, I mean, It's funny, he had an album. I remember he had an album back like around that time, but like it never popped the way
it should. Yeah, never
popped at
all. Never made no noise. But anyway, so that song I gotta rank just because even when you look back on what all of those careers ended up becoming, you know, the fact that they were all on that one track, Jay had them all on that one track, which at the time was you know, still, it still was a monumental song. Oh, monumental's kind of strong, but it still was a song that, you know, had a lot of the top artists at the time or up and coming artists,
right?
But then what they became, you know, as far as the Lox, you know, Beanie, and then the beef that ended up ensuing between Beanie and the Lox, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then Beanie and Jay and all, like the history of that song and where each, you know, groups or individuals' path took them afterward, it makes you look back at that song like, oh man, imagine that was, you know, when everything was all good and, you know, everybody was copacetic and everything. But with that said, the track itself, the beat withstanding or notwithstanding, I thought the lyrics obviously were dope. You had a lot of spitters on that track, and everybody, you know, brought their A game to that track. So, gotta give that song a mention. The reason why I put Paper Chasers on, it was tough for me, a coin toss between like Paper Chasers and that track, is because the beat one, you know, for that Paper Chasers track was dope. I dug that. To me, is debatably, I don't even see it debatably, when you put who was a top female in the game back then, some say Kim, some say Fox. I preferred Fox. I was a Foxy fan, so to speak.
We're definitely not including Lauryn Hill in this conversation, right? Like she's
I mean, well, okay. Let me.
No. You can say. Yeah, we just say. Yeah, you can say the top five. The top female artists, not including Lauryn Hill.
And to be honest with you, I can't even really include Lauryn Hill in that, because Lauryn Hill, I don't really put her in that conversation, just because yes, talent wise, impact wise. You know, her album itself was like eons above what Fox or Kim did. But I don't know. In my mind, I consider Lauryn Hill an artist more so than just a straight rapper. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I don't put it when you say, and on top of that, her career or, you know, her body of work was just so short. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She
sold like, what was it, like 40, 41 million albums between that and
Fugees? Yeah, exactly. It was just so short-lived. Like, she came in, she made that impact, and then she just disappeared, you know? Mm. But with that said, between Fox and Kim, I was more of a Fox fan. Okay. So, despite the fact that you want to say, okay, sure, did Jay write most of her lyrics, or who knows to what degree she wrote anything, that's to be debatable. But then Big did the same for Kim. But I don't know. I always dug Fox, and that track with her and Jay, I dug that track too. So
yeah, that song was dope. Yeah, and don't forget, Nas also wrote for Foxy too.
he did? Yeah. Oh yes, the whole Firm thing. Yeah, I forgot about joke.
He wrote a lot for.
Yeah.
He wrote a lot for that too. I guess what did they say? Great minds think alike. I guess it does in this situation, because I also have a tie, and this speaks how great this album is, right? Because I have a tie for the top five, for the fifth spot, but it's two different songs. For me, is It's Like That and It's All Right. So those
what?
Yep, those two are a tie for me at the fifth spot.
Calvin. What the hell are you talking about? How can you put those songs tied for five? I'm hanging up the phone right now. This is going to be the shortest podcast because your guest is hanging up on you. This is bullshit. I refuse to partake in this blasphemy any for freaking longer.
Well, you know what? I'll explain why. So It's Like That. And I think we even talked about this offline a little bit. That song to me was always fire. It didn't get enough praise, in my opinion. because it's one of the, it's probably one of the most cockiest flows that he had on this album, and that, and that whole second verse, you can just, you can just induct that into the Hall of Fame. Like,
it, yeah, man,
it hits everything: punchline, swagger, flow, cockiness. It just, it all mixes up. And it spreads
over the track. Impregnate the world when I come through your speakers? Oh, Calvin.
Fun hot. The record's got the fever.
The fever.
Oh. Yo, it's a phenomenal track. And honestly, I don't blame anyone if you had this higher, or like, anyone listening to this or yourself. I don't know what you, what, you know, we didn't go over our list together. But if you have this higher, I don't blame you. But this, that, because that track is fire. That track is absolute fire. And to me, it kind of epitomizes the spirit of the album. Outside of like the major tracks that we're gonna knock off, but like this song was like the embodiment of like the energy and the just the mindset of how the album kind of played out.
Yeah,
you know, to me. But the reason why I like It's All Right, to me, I know some people don't like it. I don't. I guess you're disputing this, and I guess we'll dispute this in a minute. But I always thought this record was dope. You know why? Due to the production. I've always been a fan of the Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime, so that always gets me, and I always like how they kind of flip that beat. And I know it's a bonus record. Technically, it's from the Streets Is Watching soundtrack, but this song was also huge at the time too. Memphis Bleek reps on this record. Jay's first verse sets the tone up for the rest of the song, and I'm usually one of those guys that like they, you know, I get tired of the song that everybody plays out. But for, mm-hmm. but me, for too. Me, but for me, for this song, for some reason, I never got tired of this.
Me too. Yo, I ranked that song. You'll see. That's why I'm so disgusted with you for putting that tied for fifth.
Oh, okay. I thought you were mad that I had this even on the list.
No. Oh, okay. I'm so insulted that you had it like ranked so low. I think both those tracks are way better than five. Yo, man, I'm sure this is probably going to be a historic disagreement, because I can't imagine what you have before this. Honestly speaking, I think I might have to get a bucket. I might vomit doing this podcast.
You want to get an ice bucket and do the ice challenge while you're talking to me?
No, I want to get a barf bucket because I'm gonna throw up. Pretty sure I'm gonna vomit in this freaking podcast.
Yeah, but I'll just add this. Like, I won't say that the song kind of, I won't say the song elevated Hov status or anything like that, but it's kind of one of those things where it's like, it adds to the success that they were having at the time. So basically at the wave that he was riding at that time, that song was like one of the waves that, like, you know what I mean? That helped him get to where he got back in 98. You know what I mean? So like, it's one of those things, like, and it's funny. Like, when I look back at the song too, it kind of reminds me of the amount of times that Hov wanted Memphis Bleek to be his heir apparent. You know, remember he went through that phase for like a good few years where it was like he was grooming Memphis Bleek to be like setting him up to be the next king.
And, yeah, man.
And don't get me wrong, I never hated Memphis Bleek. I always liked his stuff. I think he played his role great. You know, he was a great soldier for The Rock, but
yeah,
he was never meant to be a general. You know,
no, he was a number two.
Yeah,
He was what I'm looking for. Yeah, he was more like a Robin, more of a complimentary piece. He wasn't at all the main attraction in any way. He didn't have the charisma, and even musically, he just didn't have that. So like rap, like any other music, it's just, you know, there's certain things that just you really just can't put into words. You know, someone either has it or they don't. And Memphis just didn't, and Bleek just didn't have what it took just to captivate you. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was something that was just missing. It was like, yeah, he's cool on a track with someone else, or he's cool. Like, I can't even tell you I've listened to a Memphis Bleek album front to back.
No.
You know what I mean?
But like a song like this, like It's All Right, like he knocks it out. He does a great job, but you know what it is. It's like a soldier doing his job well. Knocks it out.
Exactly.
Does everything the general, you know, like lines it up for him to do. You know, but exactly. he's not gonna move ranks. You know what I mean? He's not gonna move up a level.
Exactly.
All right, so at number four, I'll let you go again. Who do you have at number four?
All right, so this was tough because the next four, honestly speaking, the degree of difference between all of them is so minuscule that I might wake up tomorrow and shuffle them. Like, any given day, I could interchange a few of these.
Right.
But the next one I'll say is a song that when I first heard it, I hated it. I thought it was garbage. And then the more I heard it, the more I was like, holy shit, this is an amazing track. And that's Money Cash Hoes, Money Cash Hoes. What? That track, when I first heard it, the beat to me, I was like, this is trash, and it's bizarre trash.
Really?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, man.
When I first heard that beat, I was like, what is this garbage? This is terrible. And, you know, like, some things just out of nowhere, you're like, wait a minute, that's brilliant. that's what that was. I heard the track, I'm like, oh, this is horrible. And then I was minding my business one day, and then it came to my head, I'm like, man, that is an amazing track. And I heard it and I listened to it again and again, and before you knew it, it just grew on me, man. And I was like, man, the beat, Swiss, I gotta say, Swiss's level of brilliance and genius was far beyond my ability to appreciate it at first listen, or even second or third listen. But man, I don't know where he found, I think that was that sample is from Othello, I believe, a video game.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I think it's from Othello, the video game, from what I understand. But yeah, like, that beat is a crazy beat. And it's a crazy beat because if you would have played it for me in the studio, and I even give Jay credit, I don't know if Jay needed convincing, because if you played me that beat in the studio, I'd be like, okay, next, Swiss. Are you, is this a joke? You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't even know how it would have flowed to that. But everybody killed that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jay and DMX killed that song. And Siegel killed that song. It was that track was, it was something, like I said, it took a while for it to grow on me, but it was so creative. It was so different from everything else out there. You know what I mean? Swiss, he hand delivered a classic beat. To me, that goes down as a classic beat. And the track itself, I mean, it made crazy noise at the time. And that song still has, you know, after 20 years, like, you know, staying power. Like I said, some things 20 years later, like, can you believe we like that? But that song still has that impact. You had two of the superpowers on that same track, who always had rumored, you know, I won't say beef, but, you know,
tension,
rumored, right? Tension or disdain for each other behind the scenes on the same track, and they complimented each other well. Mm-hmm. That was before DMX went off the rails, and, you know,
Booger Sugar.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, let his demons overcome him.
Yeah,
so yeah, man, that track to me, definitely in my top five. I'll give that the number four slot. Like I said, easily could be number three depending on the way the wind blows, but
yeah,
I'll give that number four.
I want to touch on something that you said earlier. Well, a couple of things I want to touch on. First, the concept of not liking something, and that's the power of music and the power of, like, radio and continuous spins, right? Sometimes you don't like something and you hear it enough, and then finally you find yourself humming it. Or you may go to, like, a dope party and they're blasting out loud, the crowd's going crazy, and it's like at that point you feel the essence of the song. I'm not saying this song for you, but you know what I'm talking about. Many times you've been like, that song sucks. And then you see, like, 2,000 people rocking out to the song, and you're like, yeah, okay, maybe I missed something here. Maybe this song is dope. But then you hear it again, you're like,
definitely.
Yeah, this song is dope.
It's happened to me plenty of times, brother. Plenty of times.
Yep. And then the other thing I wanted to touch on when I was working on this list, and I'm working in the spirit of this, is that, like, songs that you may not have loved back then is, you know, your taste changed, and then you kind of love it later. This song here for me is something that I think fits in that category. So number four, I have a week ago.
Really?
I do. I have a week ago. Like,
okay.
For me, like, having Hov and Too Short come together on a track, even at the time, especially after the whole East Coast, West Coast battle, like, it was big. And I mean, for me, like, I wasn't the biggest fan of Too Short, but I kind of appreciated him on the hook. Now, neither of us, because first of all, like, I should say this, I love the storytelling aspect of the song. Retelling the story of his friend who decided to snitch on him, you know, when he went to jail back, you know, before the like whole started rapping. And the whole fact of storytelling was like, it was very 90s.
And it's
like, if you didn't have like great lyrics or you couldn't paint a picture with your storytelling, you were just whack as hell. Like nobody messed with you. If you couldn't do those two things, you were not considered a great rapper.
Yeah, right? That's true.
And it's funny how like the times really change. And I think this song was like the best, like the storytelling aspect. This was probably the best storytelling version of like, storytelling track that he had on this album.
That is true.
You know, and it kind of told a real story. Now, you know, obviously, you know, the story of it, the guy kind of snitched on him and, you know, he had to kind of change up on the guy and everything else. And neither of us have been in the world of like selling drugs, obviously, you know, yeah. At this stage. You know, I don't think we ever will, but
yeah, I think it's safe to say I'm past the career change at this point.
but the concept of breaking bread has always been a real thing for me, and I think that's why it kind of resonates with me, because I think, like, you know, the concept of breaking bread, once you break bread with somebody, especially on many occasions, like for example, like me and you, for example,
yeah,
like the respect level for each other should always elevate. And
yeah, definitely.
And as we we got to the point now where we're considered middle age, or we are technically middle age now.
Hey, right? Calvin, relax on those type of vulgar.
My bad. We 28.
Not 28, but we young men. Let's just keep it at that. Let's let's limit the description of our place in the world to that. Okay, we're young men.
Yes, and let me take a little sip of my fountain of youth here.
Exactly. As long as you got that, man. You're as young as you feel after a sip.
But I was gonna say, like, you watch so many people, despite all the concept of breaking bread and understanding that fact, they still knife each other in the back over money, over jealousy, over opportunity, over women. And it kind of forces you to tighten up your situation as you get older. So, like, you know that BS meter that you know, everybody claims to have? Like, when you go through some shit after a while, that BS meter on everyone is on high alert for everything, to the point, like, you never miss the signs anymore. You know, so, like...
You know what, though? One thing I'll... I agree with you, but one thing I'll just correct... I won't say correct you on, but one thing I'll throw in there as a bit of a caveat is... I think that those traits exist not even in only in the street life, but and I'm sure you've experienced this too on a corporate level, man.
Oh no, like, of course.
People in the office stab you in the back just as quick. It's just not with a literal knife, and it's not with, you know, the stakes aren't the same. The stakes aren't, well, I caught you stabbing me in the back. Now I gotta murk you out, or I gotta, you know, make a. An example out of you or whatever. But man, I've and I'm sure we both have experienced people doing the most shady, backhanded, low-life scumbaggery that you could imagine in the office. But it's just like in the streets, it's just a difference to the rules, you know, and you know, no one raps about what happens in the office, so you don't really hear about a bunch of music. But yeah, that's the only edit I wanted to add to that's just, I think, human nature as a whole.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, when you hear those stories, we all gravitate to them because of the, you know, the street aspect to them.
No, for sure. Like, it's funny, like, this is probably the rap version, if you want to, like, this album for, like, you know, considering this album, but this is like the rap version of like the OJ's backstabbers. You know, you smile in your face all the time they want to take your place. Like, that's, we've come across those situations, whether it's on a personal life level, corporate level. You know, I've given you the story offline years ago, where at a job that I was at, like, and it's probably not too long ago, like a few years ago, I would say, a few years ago, where I came like super close, and I'm one of probably the most laid back people you'll know, and I came super super close, Sean, to knocking out my manager. Because the same thing of like smiling in your face, you know, like patting you on the back, telling you everything is good, and meanwhile they're behind the scenes trying to like turn you over, you know?
Yeah, I can relate to that. Not that coming close to knocking out management.
But yeah,
I can relate. And kudos on not acting on that emotion.
Oh my gosh, I wouldn't be doing this podcast right now if I
was. Yeah, exactly. It would be a collect call podcast. Do you accept the charges? I do, operator. But
it's like, Dad, is Kelsey on the phone? He's like,
yeah, definitely, man. That type of snake type of behavior, man. It you find people like that in all different walks of life, for sure, man.
So number three, I guess I'll start this off for number three. I got Money Cash Hoes.
I'm not mad at that.
No,
I'm not mad at that at all.
And it's funny because, like, man, just reading the song title, it kind of makes you realize just how much Jay-Z's changed over the years.
That's true.
Because he would never have a song title like this right now.
Yeah, it's true. And that's the kind of song title that makes it difficult to argue anybody that downplays, or, you know, the non-hip-hop fans that want to put rap in a box and say it really is all literally Money Cash Hoes, when you have a song called Money Cash Hoes, and, you know, who want to trivialize the content of hip-hop.
Right.
It's hard to argue it with a title like that. Yeah.
I totally agree. And especially when you compare the last two projects that he put out, like the 444 album and the album, you know, the Carter's album.
Gosh, I know.
Like, when you compare the song titles, it's crazy. You know, you look at that, and you compare it to Hard Knock Life. It's hilarious. But
you know what though? I tell you what though. And to that point, that's a great point. And that really makes you appreciate Jay-Z, because there are other people who haven't been in the game quite as long, but close. You know, people like 50 Cent, for example. His content hasn't really evolved like that. 50 Cent will put out a track today, it has essentially the same message it did in 2001 or whatever he came out with his Get Rich or Die Trying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But Jay-Z, like, it shows his music has evolved and matured as he has evolved and matured and should have. Nobody should be rapping about the same thing or liking the same thing or thinking about the same thing they were thinking about 20 years ago. Because then it's like, yo, what's wrong with you? Or were you on pause? What happened? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's one of the points you bastardly stole out of my notepad right here, Sean.
Oh. I apologize, Calvin, for, you know, for my brilliance.
Damn Crown, you mix Crown, you start to steal it. That's what happens, man. You start to steal it.
Apologies.
No, man. But it's something I want to touch on, and I agree. Like, I appreciate the same faction that you mentioned. Like,
great minds.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's like, it's one of those things. Like, I much rather this than the rapper who never changes. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't still be doing drive-bys in your 40s. You still can't be, as much as I love Mobb Deep and Prodigy, rest in peace, Prodigy. You still can't be stabbing people in the face with their own nose bone years later.
You know what I mean?
Like, it is what it is. So it's like you appreciate the evolution of that. Like, you know, judging from the song title, like, the song, as you discussed, is amazing. For me, I was the opposite of you. I love the song from the moment I heard it. The moment it went through my ears, I love that record. I thought that record was disgusting. I did, personally, and I always loved it. I love that and the remix.
The remix is dope too.
And a couple of things, like, so for me, like, I love the chaotic beat that Swiss produced. Between this and the shit he was putting out for DMX at the time, there's very few producers that come on the scene the way Swiss Beatz did back in like 98. It was ridiculous. He came on like a monster. Like, all of a sudden you're like, yo, who the hell is this guy? Why is this guy everywhere? And why is all this shit so dope? Like,
that's true. You know, you're right.
He really came on the scene like that. And then both Hov and DMX, like, this, you know, just like, this was like prime DMX. You know, unfortunately, it was the beginning of his career, but it was like prime DMX, where he was like scorching everything, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And then on top of that, the remix was a spark to one of the biggest and greatest hip hop beats that ever that ever happened. Because if you remember, the one of the verses in on the remix, Hov was like, New York's been soft since, you know, Dog Pound came and crushed the buildings. And that's what set Prodigy off and started having his little beef with Jay-Z. And then Jay-Z put him on the Summer Jam screen, which then all of a sudden involved Nas. And then, you know what, the whole thing happened after that. So it's
now, like, Calvin, your memory is impeccable. I didn't remember that that started the Prodigy beef.
My research is impeccable, son.
Wow.
I'm like a journalist, you know, baby.
Man, Calvin, hats off to you. You need a Pulitzer Prize, man. This guy's too much with the research, man.
Yo, I gotta try to be prepared, Sean, you know?
I gotta try to be
prepared. But
definitely,
like,
brother, good stuff.
But
good
honestly, stuff. Yeah, like that's my number three song when it comes to this album.
Okay.
What's yours?
Mine, I gotta say, is Jigga What, Jigga Who.
Ooh, okay.
That's my number three.
Okay.
So the song itself, I mean, it's a perfect mix of, one, the Timbaland beat was mm-hmm. dope. It's mm-hmm. crazy. Mm-hmm. Then you had Jay's flow, which was crazy. So he had the mix of the lyrics and the flow in that track.
Unbelievable.
And then Jazzo, who, you know, Jay-Z kind of ripped off for, you know, ripped off for his name, Jay-Z, and, you know, was in his shadow when Jazzo gave him his start. And he repaid him, I guess, by bringing him on this track before he ended up, you know, before they ended up having a falling out, like, you know, like a lot of other people that Jay-Z ends up messing with.
Right.
But that was hot too. Like, even Jazz, like, you know, the way they transitioned from one verse to the other track, like, no break, Jazzo just came in and started flowing. Like, that track is dope. Beginning to end, it's dope. The hook with a mill is dope. Track is just a banger, man. So again, like a lot of the other songs here, you know, if I have a bad sleep one night, I wake up in the morning and I put that track number two, you know what I mean? I put the other track number three. Mm-hmm. It all depends on how I'm feeling that day, you know. So but that one, I gotta say, man, that's one I give a lot of credit for, again, being able to remain as relevant to me, or as dope to me 20 years later, that, yeah, as absolutely. It did back then. Because I think if Jay-Z dropped that song today, people today would be like, that shit is dope today.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of music, you know, is aged and time stamped, where you're like, oh, okay, that was dope for that era. This song to me is dope for today.
It's timeless.
It could rival anything that is out today, and it could come out today, and it would seamlessly play and be given credit as far as being on the same level as tracks today if it came out today.
All right, Sean, so what do you got at number two? Let's start off with you here. What do you got at number two?
All right, so one of the reasons why I was so unimpressed with your number five before was you ranked this song way too low. Now, me, number two is It's All Right for me. Mm-hmm. It's All Right, man. And even though, like, you know, like you said, it was a bonus, man, to me, that was like one of the perfect ways to bring the album to a close. Well, actually, I think Money in a Thing was the second bonus, right?
Yeah, I think that was the last song in the album.
Which video? The video was super dope. The Money in a Thing, by the way, and Jay-Z out flossing each other. Jermaine Dupri, sorry, trying to out floss each other. That was dope. Song without the video kind of loses its appeal, but it's all right. Yo, that beat. Who produced that beat, by the way? Do you know?
I think the person is Mahogany.
Ah, jeez, that beat was dope. So many layers to that beat.
Yeah, it's sick.
That beat was that's a one of the kind of beats that I could just listen to without the lyrics and just appreciate the beat.
And that's what I said earlier. It's a song I never got tired of.
Yeah, that, like, that beat, and then like you said, Bleak played the Batman to Jay, the Robin to Jay-Z's Batman on that. You know, that Any Brother Realer Than Me is in the mess hall with they chest out. That was a classic. Mm-hmm. For the league doesn't have many of them, so, you know, got to give them credit for that. To me, that song, I'll play that today, you know, and that song still, to me, today, didn't lose its edge at all, man. So I definitely got to give that number two. I thought that a lot of, and you'll see some of the things that are missing from my list when I get to my number one, but the album had a lot of commercial success, and like you said, it had a lot of, it was his most impactful album, or at that point in time anyway, because, you know, I felt this album really was the album that really, you know, exposed Jay-Z to the world, or made the world pay attention.
Yeah.
But with that said, this song here, man, like, it's all right. It was just that feel good song that just made, that just was the ice, the cherry on the sundae of the album, man. It was just like all around dope lyrics, beat, swag, everything, the combination of everything, man. Braggadocia. It was just everything you wanted back then in hip hop.
I totally agree with you. But my number two is Jigga What Jigga Who. You know why? Yeah. You know why?
Why is that?
Got a condo with nothing but condoms in it. The same place where the rhymes invented. So all I do is rap and sex. So imagine how I stroke. See how I was flowing on my last cassette?
Yo, yeah, that's true.
That right there might be like the hottest bar on the whole damn album. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I still rewind that shit to this day. Like, that bar right there is like, it's still the hottest bar on the album to me. I don't care what anybody says. That just, that whole rhyme scheme was just disgusting.
Yeah, that was crazy, man.
And listen, like, we all like Hove, you know? Some of us even subscribe to Tidal. We love him so much, right? the whole world loves Businessman Jay. Everybody loves Mogul Jay. Everybody loves Power Couple Jay. But Prime Rapper Jay was like the disrespectful Jay.
It, yeah, sure.
You know, that was a Jay that would never befriend anyone on Coldplay. Like, that was a guy that was that was a guy that was gonna be a player until he was dead and gone. And
that's true.
And I'm not saying I want him to revert back to that, but like, whenever I need to hear like Prime Jay, like, I want to hear like cocky, disrespectful, conceited bars. Like, it's songs like this I play.
That's true.
You know,
that epitomizes everything. The cocky Jay. That's the epitome of that.
Oh yeah. 100%, 100%. And while we, you know, you talked about Money Cash Shows, and we're both, you know, talking about Swiss Beats showing up on the scene as a monster, like, Timbaland was already there.
Like, oh yeah, definitely.
Like Timbaland was like, it's almost like the equivalent of like the player that drops like 35 points a night. Like, that was him. He was dropping like 35 a night on any hip hop track or album, or R&B track. You know what I mean? And it's funny because, like, right, he was right in his prime at that point. Like, he was like entering his prime, or like he was smack in the middle of it. But either way, he was in the prime of his career right there, where like creativity was like at an all time high.
Yeah, that guy, definitely.
You know, and for me, like, he's on my Mount Rushmore producers alongside Dr. Dre and DJ Premier. I'm still not sure who my fourth face would be on that mountain. You know, it could be RZA, it could be Kanye, it could be just Blaze. I don't know. I'm still not sure. You know,
I tell you what, and to that point, I don't think that Timbaland gets the credit he deserves for being so away from the pack with his production.
Oh my god!
And I'm not well versed in all the intricacies of production, but I'm pretty sure that he innovated a lot of shit people bit and took and carried, because it was just so different. Like, double drum patterns. And it was just crazy, the things he was doing, man. He was doing things, and even the terminology I just used, I'm sure it's not really the correct terminology for what I'm trying to say, but I mean, Timbaland shit was just so different from everybody else. It was so innovative, so creative, man. It had no predecessor that you could say, like, oh, he's like blank. It was just like, where did you come up with that? Like, how did you, where did you think of that? How did that come to you, man?
He had a great way of making, like, the beats. His beats always sounded like the future. They sounded futuristic.
Yeah, man.
And it didn't make sense. Like, you can't even say, like, this beat was fire. Like, It would be disrespectful to say this beat was fire. Like this beat back then was like the sun.
Exactly. No, you phrase it perfectly, Calvin. It didn't make sense. Like, it literally, you heard, like, someone should have, like, been like, Timberlake, this doesn't make any sense. Like, be serious. How did you think of this? I want you to explain to me where you came up with this. Like, it's a deal with the devil, something, there's sorcery involved, there's something involved. Beyond, he just thought of that shit. To this day, I refuse to believe he thought of those things just came to him. I don't get it, man.
He performed the seance over the mixing board. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, Ouija boards or some obia. There's something involved with that type of inspiration that's just beyond. Oh yeah, you know what I just think would sound good? No, I don't think so, Timbo. I'm not buying that, buddy.
And listen, I love Swiss Beatz as a producer too, and I see them having, you know, like over the last couple of years, you know, Swiss is battling like different producers and stuff. But it's all that shit is great for the culture, and I love all of it. I watch all those YouTube clips, but like when he went up against Timbaland, I was like, nah, bro, nah, I can't.
And would you believe, Calvin? I agree 100%. And would you believe people act like Swiss won that?
Yeah, I'm like,
no. What are you crazy?
I'm like, I love Swiss Beatz shit. Like, I even like that track he has on now, the one with Lil Wayne. Like, I'm not crazy.
Dope.
Yeah, that beat is like,
as soon as
you hear the beat, it just makes you do that, you know, you scrunch up your face. Just like, you know, like, it's just, it makes you want to put your Timberlands on. Like, that's.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's dope until he, like, to your point, until he ruined it by letting his wife come to the party.
Yeah.
And ruin it with her ballad, with her piano or string ballad.
I'll never understand why that was added. It was not needed. And Alicia Keys is very talented, but it wasn't needed.
It ruined the second half of the song.
Yeah, it wasn't needed. But that first minute of the song, it's legendary. Like this, Swiss Beatz is amazing. Man. I love Swiss Beatz. This is no knock on Swiss Beatz. Yeah. But that's why I'm like, yo, my Mount Rushmore producers is those three, and I'm like, I'm still thinking of who the fourth one would be. I still don't know. After all these years, I still don't know who the fourth one would be after all these years.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but like that jigga what jigga who beat is like it's disgusting. Like there's nothing more to be said. It's disgusting. It's just
it is.
The way Jay-Z rolled that like Secretariat. There's no other way to say it, man. Like there was a beat that you didn't understand, like how that was even made, and then this guy wrote it like it was like drinking water. It made no sense. It actually could be your number one track, but obviously
it could easily be that.
It could easily be the number one track. Easily be. So the number one song for your list of the top five songs of the Hard Knock Life album, I want to see if this matches up. It should match up, but let's just see. Let's see if you throw me for a loop here. What's your number
one? Okay. So my number one, contrary, and I know what you're going to say. I know what your number one's probably going to be. I understand why it's probably going to be that, but I'll say what I'm sensing your number one is, one, I never really liked that much. I liked it the first listen. I understood why people liked it, but it never really had that impact on me. It did on everybody else. So I'll say my number one is a surprise. It's Like That, y'all. That's my number one.
You black bastard. Sorry, go on. What were you saying?
That's my number one. It's Like That. Again, that track, I don't think it gets ranked, doesn't get rated super high when people look at that album. It's I think categorized as a decent filler. But to me, man, that beat, his flow, you know, so much, like, it's laid back. It's not one of those tracks that are gonna bang at the club, you know what I mean, that are super high energy. But that song to me, that like on my playlist, tracks that I have, you know, from back in the day, I put that one on there. I don't put even Money Cash Hoes, Jigga What Jigga Who. I listen to that when I listen to this album. But as far as tracks that I put into a mixed playlist of old school tracks, it's like that is my go-to from that album, man. I always love that song. And it's one of those things that someone asked me to explain, even now I'm trying to explain to you why I like it so much. I really can't. I have no idea why I like it more than those other songs that have better commercial appeal, mm-hmm. even what I could say had better, if I, you know, even like, you know, the Jigga What Jigga Who, if we talk about production, what I'd be like, it's like that is a better beat, not a better beat. I just like it more. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. just something about that track that always resonates with me. So, I don't know. I just, to me, that's my top track on that album. But.
You dirty bastard. How do you not have Hard Knock Life on here in your top five? What is wrong with you, Sean?
It's just a boring song.
Oh, man. My God.
Hard Knock Life is a boring track, bro. I always found it boring. I could appreciate the sample, the Annie sample. That was a brilliant idea.
You make me sick.
Like, the Annie sample, the sample's a brilliant idea. Is it a great beat? Not really. It's okay. It's all right. I think people got mesmerized by the Annie sample and just got hypnotized and bamboozled by it. It's okay.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to argue with your list except for that song. I think that song needs to be in the top five. But, you know, everybody's different, right? And that's, and like I said, our list wasn't going to be the same. And that's why we don't, anytime I do these kind of lists, whether it was with you or somebody else, I never, like, go back and forth and say, hey, Sean, so who's your number four? Or who's your number three? Let's just try to match this up. I don't even want to know.
Yeah.
I want to find out when we record it together. So, it's cool the fact that it's not the same as mine. I do appreciate that.
But okay, let me ask you this though. 20 years later, it's a Hard Knock Life. It's not too slow for you. It's a slow ass song, man. It's a slow, like, agreed lyrics he says on it is dope. Jay-Z didn't spit very many whack lines on that, but
on the album, period.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sorry, the album, like, he doesn't have a lot of throwaway bars on that, but. I mean, it wasn't, I don't know, the song's so slow, it has no energy, like, I don't know, to me, I just,
but it was, but I don't know. But I, you know, and I'll get to my reason why, but just to touch on Like That one more time, I love chicks that puff Chiba and Reefer Paper. I hate the ones that blow up your beeper, because I go in deeper. I only bone divas. I impregnate the world when I come
when
through.
When I come through your speakers,
I can't lie. That's like one of the hottest bars on the album. Even though it's, yep. even though 20 years later he would never, you would never make this song without getting his hand slapped by Beyonce. But like, it's, you know, again, it's, that was Hov at the time, man. Like that bar right there was Hov. It was genuine Hov at the time, man.
Yeah,
like that was like effortless, cocky, you know, brilliant, a million metaphors mixed in. You can go a bunch of different ways. Like, yeah, like, yo, man. It's like that is a sick record. That's why it's in my top five. I'll never, like, it has to be in everybody's top five to me. Like, I think that song was, it just wasn't. It wasn't talked about enough. It really wasn't.
Man.
You know, but
and again, don't get me wrong. I'm fully conscious of the fact that that song will not be categorized as the best song on that album by a majority of the people. I'm fully aware of that, and I can't offer any explanation as to anybody why that song is not the best song on the album. Mm-hmm. It's just a song. And I'll even tell you, song for song, I would understand why it's not the best song on the album. It's not the best song on the album if you want to talk about, you know, quality of a song. It's like someone saying, is that the nicest shirt in the world? Mm-hmm. Nah, I just like that shirt on me. I just think it looks great on me.
Right.
And that's how I think of that song. Like, not the best song on the album, I just like it the best. I can't explain why, I just like it the best.
Like I said, I can't, when you're saying it's like that, I you know, I'm not gonna, if you said like Paper Chasers number one, I think I would come to Montreal to fight you. But I love Like That so much that I can't knock you for making it number one. I just think Hard Knock Life should be in your top five. That's just me, but again, that's why everybody's opinion is different. I'll tell you why Hard Knock Life for me is number one. I may have mentioned this story before, you know, and if I did, who cares? I'm gonna tell it again. So the reason why, like, this song was number one to me, and this story I do remember. I remember the first time I heard this song, right? I think we're coming from, we actually went to go visit Hot 97, right? Me and my brother, DJ Chris Nice, we went to go visit Hot 97. This is like back, right around that time. And we're leaving to go back to Toronto. We're driving across the Brooklyn Bridge and we're sitting in all this traffic and they played the world premiere, Hot 97, world premiere of Hard Knock Life. And yo, when they dropped that song, Sean, I'm telling you, like, just being in the city at that time, and I recognized that I was leaving the city that day. Yo, by the time it got to the end of the song, you knew right there, like, not only that Jay-Z had a winner, you know, because you know, prior to that, he had, like, you know, the Reasonable Doubts. He didn't have any, like sure shot number one singles come from that or from Volume One. But, like, not only you knew that you knew the song was a winner, you knew it was over for everybody else, especially at that
time. Yeah, it's true.
Like, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of, it's like the dunk contest with Vince Carter. The first dunk where there's a 360 windmill going the wrong way. You know, as soon as you did that dunk, like, you knew nobody stood a chance.
Yeah, it's true. You're like, right. I remember that exact moment too.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's, to me, that's what that song represented. Like, no, you knew right there, no one stood a chance because it was like something. Like, he basically gave us what everybody was missing at the time. Because, like, that Tupac Biggie void that was kind of missing and nobody really took that mantle, like, that void kind of got filled up in that one song. Like, it sounded fresh. It sounded new. It was totally unlike anything we ever heard during that time. And to me, I know you say that the beat is slow, whatever, but, like, to me, the beat is timeless just because of the hook. And what it represented at the time, like, it was rhythmic, it was nostalgic, it was lyrical, it was effortless, cocky, like, and then basically every region can get into it for their own different reasons. The beat knocked, so New York can get with it. It was street enough that New York could get with it. It was slow enough that the Dirty South can get with it. It was relaxed enough that the West Coast can get with it. You know, we Canadians, we just loved it. Like, you know, like, it was just, yeah. It gave you everything. Like, it hit every, it's almost like, you know, when you're like, you're test tasting food and there's like, there's something that you take a bite of and it hits every palate on your tongue. Like, that's this song. Like, it hits, it gets on every different palate of your tongue. And like I said, even though we had like two albums before this, like, I think this song too, it set the foundation up for what would happen to Rockefeller for the next, like, 5 years, and it kind of set up Hov on a reign that we never seen before in hip hop. Like, the song is number one, not only for the fact that it just, for me, it goes hard, but it literally made the world roll out the red carpet for everything that Jay-Z was gonna do. And then once the album matched the energy of the song, like, that was it. Like, his career was never the same.
You're right 100%, and I'll say, That's why this song to me is such a paradox, because me too, when I heard that song with the hook, I'm like, oh wow, he got a winner here, man.
You knew it right away.
Yeah, I knew it. I'm like, this is big. And I knew that put Jay-Z in a whole new bracket, a whole new space, because prior to that, Jay-Z was the cool. Jay-Z was kind of like the guy that knew and thought he was cooler than you actually thought he was, and he was so sure about it, you're like, maybe he just is cool, you know what I mean?
Right,
because lyrically he was dope, he was always dope, Reasonable Doubt, dope. He always acted like he had a secret that nobody else knew, and the secret was, I'm this dope, you guys just don't realize it. That's all, that was always his the way he carried himself.
Yeah,
and it was always like, it was so, he was so sure of it. Like I said, it just made you really think, like, am I just not catching how dope this dude is? Because he's dope, but I just don't care as much as he thinks I should care. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then when when Hard Knock Life came out, then you're like, okay, this is what you were so confident about.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But, and like you said, it really, really legitimized Jay, and beyond legitimized him, it legitimized him, and then it made you say, oh yeah, you are that much better than everybody else. But with that said, I can't put it into words. That song to me is kind of like Nas. Like, I know it's great.
Gonna go down this road again.
I know it's great. I just don't want to hear it that much. I'm like, that's real great. I just don't care that much though.
If I had an afro, I'd have pulled out a fist of my own hair in my hand right now. Don't you dare disrespect us, blasphemous to talk about Nas this way.
And don't get me wrong, at a party back in the day, play Hard Knock Life, all right, but, you know, I could get with it. But again, it was just too slow, man. It just didn't really resonate with me. It didn't really hit home with me in the long run. And 20 years later, it hits home even less. I can't tell you the last time I listened to Hard Knock Life. Anytime it starts, I hear the bass line. Get the bass line. Skip right away. Next. I don't even listen to that song.
You know what? I don't want to touch on something real quick before I go to our last two questions and then we wrap this up. You bring up a great point where you say that, like, he felt like he was better than you thought he was. And
yeah.
It makes me think of where I'm from. Remember the song off Volume 1? I know you know what the song I'm talking about. And it has a classic verse. And Ziggy can argue all day about who's the best MCs, Biggie, Jay-Z, and Nas. And I remember that, like, I love that song. Like, that song was sick. Still sick to me to this day.
It is sick. But, like, that was a dope song.
Oh, it's a disgusting song. But I still remember, like, around that time when he said that, I was like, who's arguing about that? Nobody put Jay-Z in that category. What the fuck is he talking about? You know?
The only guy would be some guy who looks like Jay-Z with glasses and a mustache. Like, you look a lot like Jay-Z.
You know that Jay-Z really is he really is better than Big. What are you talking about? You know, like, I'm like, yo, I've been in a lot of, you know, like, hip-hop arguments back then. I never said, man, Jay-Z's just as good as Nas. He's just as good as Biggie. Never. I never thought that, even though I really respected what Jay-Z was doing. And
yeah.
But as you said, like, this, to me, this song and, like, this album as a whole, I think that kind of, like, brought it to the stratosphere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So here's a question I'll ask you right now as we wrapped up our top five list. When you think of this album, where would you rank this album in Jay-Z's catalog? Like, if this catalog was a 100-meter sprint and you had to give a gold, of silver, and a bronze medal to in terms of albums in the Jay-Z's catalog, how would you rank this? I figured you know, listening back to, like, the podcast we did about Reasonable Doubt a couple of years ago, I probably should put that back out as, like, a throwback or something. I remember you saying back then that you didn't think Reasonable Doubt was as good as this album. So with that said, right, going back to that conversation, it made me think of this, and I guess trying to put this question together. Like, if this is a 100-meter sprint, how would you, like, what would be the top three albums if this was included? If this is number one, what would be the silver and the bronze?
So, yeah, this I definitely give my number one.
Okay.
I think it's Jay-Z's best body of work. I think it was Jay-Z at his prime. A lot of songs, a lot of albums after this, I think that Jay-Z's cachet, his, you know, he still had the lyrics and stuff, but I don't think he was ever as sharp as he was in this album. I don't think he was ever as fresh and you know, had a mixture of beats, features, lyrics. I just think this was his best work, best body of work. Mm-hmm. Number two, I'll give that to The Blueprint.
Okay.
I'll say I'll give The Blueprint. That's what I would say would be number two. Number three is difficult for me. I'll say Reasonable Doubt, just because the impact, or just because that was essentially the introduction of Jay. He did have a lot of classic tracks on that, although he had a lot of throwaways as well. But I found a lot of the subsequent albums, to be honest with you, they just didn't have the staying power. A lot of them didn't have the staying power. Okay. Black Album was dope too. Black Album, I give it an honorable mention. But a lot of tracks on a lot of the other albums, I found throwaways. I found forgettable. And Jay-Z was never garbage. Although that whole, like I told you before, that whole one where he was like thinking he's Frank Lucas, that one.
Oh, American Gangster.
Yeah, that one. So we need to erase that from the Jay-Z archives. Not that it was garbage, but just the whole premise. You were inspired in your Frank Lucas. Chill, man. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but with that said, yeah, that's what I would say. I would say number one would be the Hard Knock Life. Two, Blueprint. Three, Reasonable Doubt, just out of principle, kind of, but honorable mention, or kind of sitting on the Blueprint's, or Reasonable Doubt shoulder, like, you know, it would be the Black Album, I'd say.
I guess to answer my own question, number one, I'd have Kingdom Come. No, I'm just joking.
You're about to hear an emphatic, I can't slam the phone down because it's a cell phone, but an emphatic press on the end button right there.
I agree with you. I think I'd have Hard Knock Life number one, actually. I agree with you. And for everything you just said, I won't change a word, change a letter. I wouldn't change anything. To me, I think that was number one. It was almost like if this is like a 100-meter race and it was the greatest 100-meter sprint in the world, this was like Usain Bolt breaking the sprinting record. Like this album for, like, in terms of the catalog anyway, to me that was number one. It's funny, I always said I really liked Volume One. I was one of those guys that, like, I came late to the game on Reasonable Doubt, and I really liked Volume One at the time. I thought, even though people were ripping Volume One, I thought it had some gems on there.
It did.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it in my top three, but I'm just saying, like, just to mention that, like, it had some gems on there. I would say Reasonable Doubt is number two, but I feel like Reasonable Doubt is number two and is very extremely closely followed by the Blueprint and the Black Album. Like, to me, you know what I mean? Like, I think it could be like you can change any of those ones, you know, on any given day. Like, Hard Knock would be number one, but if tomorrow I woke up and be like, you know what? I think the Black Album is number two. You know, like,
yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's one of those things. I think it goes like it's probably tied for third with the Blueprint. You know, because I think the Black Album was like, that album was superior. Like, I wouldn't say it was a classic like Hard Knock Life, but yeah, I think it was a superior album when you look back on, like, the track listing of that. It was an amazing album. Like, that was supposed to be the retirement swan song, you know?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Of course, he put out many more albums after that.
One of many, yeah.
You know, but again, like, that album was dope. That album was really dope.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, just to wrap up the podcast, what are your final thoughts whenever you see that Hard Knock Life album? Like, what's your lasting impressions with it?
To me, that was the beginning of Jay-Z's reign as, you know, the best MC out there. And you could say arguably the best MC, you know, of course, you know, the epic battle remains Jay-Z or Nas, depending on who you know, what side of the fence you're on, you'll argue to the death, like, you know, like a Game of Thrones scene, you know, to your point, to your king. But I mean, that was the album there where, you know, like I said, Jay-Z really, really set himself away from the pack, you know what I'm saying, where he that like that I can't think of another example where, or actually, that's not true. I can think of many examples, but that is one example where an album really, really completely, what's the word I'm looking for? It completely changed where he dwelled forever in hip hop annals. Like after that, Jay-Z was just, you know, legions above everybody else. And he was on a level, a pinnacle that a dope album couldn't help you achieve. It was like, you're no Jay-Z. And yeah, that album was what set Jay-Z on that level where you can discuss him with Nas, and where you could discuss him with Big. Like, Prodigy never had that kind of album. Prodigy, you know, many was, and you know, we discussed this before, at one time, was the, people would argue he was the best rapper out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he never had a Hard Knock Life moment that made people say, oh man, okay, this guy's, you can't even argue with this guy's the best. Like, he never had that moment, you know? Jay had that moment. Nas had that moment, you know? Big 50 had, Cent.
Yeah, 50 Cent had that moment for sure.
He had that moment. Lil Wayne had that moment, you know what I mean? So different people have that moment. And like, the thing is though, Jay, like, even 50 Cent, you could say one about 50 Cent, yeah, his album, it had such an impact because of the way album sales were at that time. And, you know, he just came and really, you know, was a complete, he completely took over the game and stuff. But even that album, I don't think had the impact of a Hard Knock Life. Or maybe I'm just old and I'm, and that was my heyday. So I'll be like, these young whippersnappers, you know.
And by the way, get off my lawn. I just cut it.
Exactly. But to me, that the Hard Knock Life, man, like, that was something. It was just an event, man. It was like you were part of, you were witnessing something that you just knew was, you know, going to, was a part of history that wouldn't be forgotten, man.
Yeah, I would agree. I think, it's funny, like, my lasting impressions of this album, to me, like, the way I look at it, it was a classic album that was dropped at the perfect time. You know what I mean? Like, it was a time like when hip hop really needed it. And I know you're giving me credit for like some of like the edgy, like the research and stuff that I did, and some of it is research, some of it is memory, but like, you know how life goes, man. Like, everything is a cause and effect. You know, an event happens and life makes its reactionary moves, and then everything falls into place based on those reactions, right?
And yeah, yeah.
Like, the East Coast, West Coast battle and the resulting deaths of Biggie and Tupac, it kind of changed everything as we knew it back then. And the reason why I remember parts, like, a lot of this stuff is because Bad Boy, after Biggie died especially, Bad Boy filled that void. Based on Puff's No Way Out album, based on Biggie's Life After Death album, based on Mace's album, you know, we're not even going to include like Total and 112 and stuff. Like, especially in 97, because like in 97, I was in New York a lot that summer. I spent most of my summer in New York, and I was at all these different basketball camps and stuff. So every basketball camp I went to, I would come back and spend the weekend back in New York. And, you know, or spend like a week in New York and then go back to another basketball camp, then come back to New York. So I was in New York for like most of that summer. And, you know, I got my, you know, back, especially back in like those days, like, especially when you go to New York, you knew what the number one album was basically whatever car was passing, whatever album you heard or song or artist you heard the most, you knew that was like the number one person. And and at that time, like, I remember being in New York in like 95, when like right around the time when Raekwon came out with Cuban Links, and Sean, literally every car that you drove past, every MPV that you drove past had, you know, every Lexus, every Acura that was every legend that was passing by was blasting the Purple Tape, you know. And then in 97 it was the same thing, but it was Puffy. The shiny suit era was in full effect, right?
Okay.
But like, I don't think, like, I think because like Puffy wasn't a rapper, it didn't like totally stick to your guts. And I think after a while, people just started getting tired of the whole shiny suit era, right?
Yeah, agreed. I agree with that.
And then on top of that, you look at like Death Row at the time. Death Row was done. You know, like Tupac was dead. Snoop basically moved with No Limit. You know, he was a No Limit soldier. You know,
which was a weird, forgettable moment in history.
Right. like the South started to rise, but it wasn't where it is now. You know, like Wu-Tang, they were still hitting, but they were slowly starting to fade out of the prime. What was the name of their album, the double album? What was it called again? Wu-Tang?
What's that?
Was it Wu-Tang Forever or something?
I think it might have been Wu-Tang Forever, right? Which was doo-doo. I gotta say, that was when I just kind of purposefully pretended it just didn't happen. I didn't even really give that any attention.
I didn't think it was that bad. I think it sold millions, but it wasn't on the level of like their other highly elite albums. Like especially when you consider like Cuban Links and, you know, and even ODB's album and 36 Chambers. Like it wasn't on the level of that. You know, even though it was a double album, right?
But we won't get into that. But they set such a high standard that even though it wasn't garbage, to me it was garbage because it just wasn't what I expected from them.
Yeah,
because the high standard I held them to.
Because the hype was at the all time high, and then remember at the time, like I said, Biggie was dead, you know, and Tupac was gone, and you figure like, yo, they're just gonna take over the game now, like just be on that totem pole alone, and then it just didn't happen, right?
Was that Triumph? That was that album?
Yeah, that was Triumph, right.
Oh, yeah, I hated that album.
That was... and then, as you mentioned earlier, like, Nas had The Firm, but that was it, and then he disappeared from the scene for, like, a while. And then,
yeah, that's true.
And then you had, like, doing the research, you had some great albums that came out that year. Like I mentioned before, you had DMX, he came on the scene, he dropped two big albums that exploded on the scene. You know,
that was dope.
Yeah, you can't knock. Like I said, DMX had his time, man. Whatever. I remember people want to see him now and make fun of him now. Like, yo, DMX had his time, man.
He was the man.
Like, jeez. The man, Sean. Like, you can't, like, we could never take that away from him, man.
Ever.
Never. Like, seriously. Like, he was like the big boss at that point. And then, like I said, Lauryn Hill, you know, as you know, aforementioned, she dropped the Miseducation album. You know, we did a previous podcast on this a few weeks back. Outkast, I know you don't like Outkast, but Outkast had Aquamemi. That was like a 5-star solidification in the source. You had, like, Big Pun had his Capital Punishment album. Black Star had a fire album that was, like, for the underground heads. Like, that was, like, a big album. Even
that album was dope.
Yeah, that album was dope. And even Busta Rhymes, he had his... And you know what? I think next year is like the anniversary of Extinction Level Event, and we will definitely do the podcast on that next year. But
that album was dope too. That album, I think we've already discussed this too. That album doesn't get the respect it deserves.
Oh my god!
Busta Rhymes doesn't get the respect he deserves.
Oh my god! That album was bananas. That album, Extinction Level Event, was bananas.
Yeah, it was bananas.
But he had When Disaster Strikes, the album before that. And that was nice too. It had
that was crazy too.
Put Your Hands Where Your Eyes Can See, like that song. I mean, I don't have to tell you that song was song was probably as big as Hard Knock Life at that point. It was crazy.
It was dope.
But Hard Knock Life, the song and the album, it made Hov the king, man. It, like, everybody just gave him the crown. And then from that, the success just snowballed from there. Everything they did, from like Memphis Bleek stuff to Beanie Siegel stuff to Freeway to Cameron to Just Blaze and then to Kanye. Yeah. Like, everything's, I think all the success, the future success that stacked on top of each other, all came from this album.
You know? Yeah, it was the foundation.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And to me, like, regardless of how you revere like Reasonable Doubt, and even in Hov's eyes, he's like, yo, this was his version, this was his Illmatic and all that, right? Like, but to me, it doesn't supersede the impact.
Except it was better, of course.
Yeah, of course, Illmatic was better. But
no. I mean, this was better than
Illmatic. No, I heard what you said. No, Illmatic was better. We're not gonna go back and forth with this, Sean. but I don't think Reasonable Doubt supersedes the impact of Hard Knock Life. I think it's the most It's the best and the most impactful album that Jay-Z ever put out.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it captured everything, man. Like, what can you say? It captured literally everything. Captured commercial, the streets, the clubs. Women loved it. Guys loved it. You know, thugs loved it. Who didn't love Hard Knock Life?
Yeah, man. Had something for everybody.
Yeah, it really did. And I think just to touch on it again, I think he came out with the classic album at the perfect time. He came at the time when hip hop needed a classic album. Like, it needed like the undisputed, like, classic, like, yo, this is my throne. I'm the man. This is my shit. Like, that's that type of album. Like, hip hop was kind of, it needed that. And he stepped right in it, man.
Yeah.
And it just changed everything. It changed everything from, you know, how we see music now. You know, from the Lil Wayne's to the Drake's to the J. Cole's and everybody else that came along after. It's like that album kind of changed the future.
Yeah, hip-hop. Oh, yeah, well said. I agree 100%, man.
All right, sir. So once again, Sean, thank you for coming on the stoop and sharing your thoughts. Sir. On like, you know, I still can't believe you didn't put Hard Knock Life in your top five, but we're just going to... I wish I could edit that out, but I'm not gonna. But
you know, somebody's got to make an objective and you know, bring some clarity to top fives, you know, occasionally. So I had to do that. Bless your podcast with that, you know, first take.
Yes. Skip Bayless, Max Kellerman,
Hard Knock Life was trash as a single. No, I'm kidding. I won't say trash, but it just wasn't. It wasn't my cup of tea, but I could appreciate, you know, again,
but
you know, the impact.
But you know what, though? But I will agree, though. I will agree that it's not something that, like, you may play now. You know what I mean? Like, now you may play it and you might be like, yeah, you might listen to it for nostalgic reasons, but you might not rewind it. You know what I mean? And there's nothing exactly. Wrong with the song. Like, the song is, to me, still sick. Like, there's nothing wrong with the song, but it's just, you're like, I understand. I understand what you're saying with that. But I know the song, like, it basically was the foundation for everything.
Yeah, which is why I won't hate him being on anybody's top five. I could understand it. I could dig it. I could dig it.
All right, sir. So you finish your crown. You finish your crown. I finished my Grey Goose.
Yeah. I took my last sips. And I'm feeling a nice vibe.
Yes, sir. I'm amazed. My words aren't slurred right now. I'm actually kind of shocked. I put a lot of Grey Goose in that cup.
See, that means you didn't put enough, man. If you don't trip over your words, if you don't feel like you have marbles in your mouth, then that means you didn't have enough. Your glass wasn't full.
On that note, all right, let's get off this stoop.
All right, brother.
All right. Thank you all for tuning in to The Stoop, a mini podcast series. And I'm always grateful that you continue to lend me your ears. I always like these type of episodes because, you know, it's cool sometimes going down memory lane, especially when it's regarding the culture, and especially when we're discussing great bodies of work. And this album right here, it pretty much wrapped up the golden era, and it started hip-hop off in a new direction. And more importantly, it sent Jay-Z off into a new stratosphere that we, quite frankly, just haven't seen in the game before. Shout out goes out to Sean Adonis for sharing his thoughts on The Stoop. Much appreciated, brother, as always. And as always, you can listen and subscribe to South Shore Ave wherever you listen to podcasts. But specifically, you can check it out on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify, and rate the shows on your favorite podcast apps. I know I joke around a lot about it, but do rate the shows. It's important, and I greatly appreciate it if you do it. All right, and make sure you check out the entire catalog of podcast shows by subscribing to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. I greatly appreciate all the support with The Stoop. We got a couple episodes left before we wrap up season 3 of the miniseries. I got a couple of projects coming down the pipeline for the new year, South Shore Ave related, of course, so stay tuned for that. And next month, the Ave podcast will be back up and running when we launch the annual NBA season preview where we break down the Eastern and Western Conference. The NBA offseason has been super busy, so you know there's going to be a lot to talk about. Where will Jimmy Butler end up by the time we have these episodes up? Brooklyn's final season that the Celtics don't debo their draft pick. How the Lakers going to end up with LeBron James and his new band of teammates? Will the Warriors win 100 games in the regular season? Will Kawhi Leonard laugh ever again? We'll dive into all of that. And just make sure you check us out on South Shore Ave Radio. All right? For Sean Adonis, this is Cal C. And you just tuned in to The Stoop on South Shore Ave Radio. All right, until next time, folks. Peace. We out.